Hi, I'm Matt McFarland from The Growing Season. Coming up, we'll talk to you about edible herbs and how they can be considered sage advice. Shovel along with us. Ladies and gentlemen, we're getting edible. This is The Growing Season, brought to you by GrowingSeasonCanada.com. I'm Matt McFarland, as I am every single week. And speaking of every single week, I am pleased to be joined by the United Nations of Horticulturalists. Mom, to my left, how are you?
I'm doing just okay.
And
fine.
What? Actually. Just okay? Why?
No, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Okay, Dad?
Long-term.
Matthew, wonderful. And listeners, happy Earth Day.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So we actually originally had slotted this show, this week's affairs. We were going to do this as part of our Celebrating Spring series. But now, granted, this is Celebrating Spring, but we also had thought the matriarch and the patriarch posited, why not do this in and around Earth Day? And the reason being is that food, Mom, is insanely expensive these days.
Yes. Yes.
Especially fruit, man.
Yeah. So this week's show is all about edibles, and not necessarily edibles that have THC and CBD.
Yeah,
however, if you are into that, that's okay. Yeah. You guys use edibles, yes?
Yes, we do.
I do, Matt, for pain.
For pain
really
regulation.
Helps. And it helps your sleep, too.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So again, if you ever hear my dad going, oh, my God, there's a pink elephant in the room. No, it's not. Dad, just relax.
No.
Everything, take it easy. But the point is that because food is so expensive, we thought, or they thought, and I think it's a great idea, that it would be a wonderful thing to chat about how you would grow food that would be, or how you would grow plants that would produce a level of edible things, aka fruit or veggies. All that and more on The Growing Season. This is The Growing Season, brought to you by GrowingSeasonCanada.com. Man, I can't say Growing Season any more times. Pass the Dutchie. Let's get ready to shovel! This is The Growing Season, brought to you by GrowingSeasonCanada.com. All one word. Again, directly after this show airs, you can click on Listen and Watch, and allows you to listen to this show in its entirety, plus all of our back catalog, as well as scroll down to that Watch section. That's where I'm going to be posting all of our adventures with the Weather Network when those links to that video come in, as we do every single week. Miss Emily McFarland, would you please bring us in? All right. You know what? Honestly, I can't even do better than my granddaughter. Oh my God, not yet.
No.
Than my daughter. She's a chip off the old block, right?
Nah, she's a cutie.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, where do we begin?
Matt, let's hit the history of Earth Day. Since we're talking about increasing yield on our fruit, let's hit Earth Day.
Okay, because, it feels like this wasn't a thing when I was super young, was it?
No, Earth Day actually started in 1970, and it was started by an American senator named Gaylord Nelson.
Okay.
And he wanted to make us realize how important the Earth is, and he wanted certain bills passed in Congress. He wanted a Clean Air Act and a Clean Water Act passed, and he felt making Earth Day a thing in the U.S., this would have his constituents and all Americans to put pressure on the American government to start looking after the environment, and us Canadians, we followed suit.
Okay, so, but it doesn't work.
Well, it works and it doesn't work.
What do you mean by why would I say that?
We implement things that I would say would help out an environment, so why doesn't it work?
Well, all right, hold on a second. Yeah, are we seeing a decrease in
No, we're not. I think, though, Matt, I'm thinking now, I'm remembering when I was a kid growing up in the 50s and 60s, okay? I used to step on insects and, you know, do all kinds of nasty things like that. And I think what it is doing, yes, we're not solving all the problems yet. We are in very small increments, but it's making us overall more aware of what we're doing to this planet and more appreciative of this planet, and hopefully the awareness and appreciation will hopefully turn the tide.
I disagree. I 100% disagree. And here is why. There are videos out there of the Trash Mountain.
Oh, yeah.
I forget where it is.
Yeah, possibly India or
We are not slowing down any of the issues.
No.
Okay, so, Mom, here's my little analogy. Do you like the dentist?
Not particularly.
So if you could choose to not go to the dentist, you wouldn't go to the dentist, right?
No.
Why? Why? Look,
it's mainly the bill.
Okay. Most people have an aversion to the dentist because of discomfort.
Yeah.
Right?
I have never had that.
We are, as a society, in the avoiding the dentist phase of climate change. Because what's going to happen with this whole thing is there is going to be some discomfort. For instance,
they're
implementing this brand new carbon tax, and people are freaking out about this carbon tax. Unfortunately, this is going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
There's going to be some discomfort. For instance, you might have to say no to going on some vacation because
Stop
of
flying.
The climate impact of being on an airplane.
Yep.
Or you might say, you know what, maybe we should as a family go down to one vehicle because of the climate impact, right, as a result of driving, right?
Well,
we shouldn't be putting down vinyl floors, but vinyl floors are cheaper than hardwoods. Yep. And again, it all comes down to money. Yes?
Well, it's like that book. And I think they made a movie from it. The book by Al Gore, The Inconvenient Truth.
Yeah, that's exactly. And I'm not trying to get political here. But the point is that I live with an interior designer who focuses on sustainable design. And she is number one, 100% of the opinion. We are too late. That's it.
That's scary.
There is no going back. We're done. And they warned us 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And nobody is listening.
Because
and the reason why nobody is listening is because these large CEOs in charge of corporations, they got to get their bonuses. So we got to make sure that we're using cheaper materials elsewhere because you got to have my Mercedes SL500.
I get it.
Yeah.
Right?
So, Maddie, let's step back in time. Let's go to the...
to an easier time before the Mercedes SL500.
When we lived naturally.
So let's say your mom and I were living in the Neolithic time around 8,000
years ago.
You know,
that makes sense.
Ago.
You guys are about that old.
Yeah, wearing skins.
You got to remember, we had you
hair.
About 3 years after, so you're living there too.
Yeah, that's why my beard is white.
Yeah.
He's Iron Age. No.
So, Maddie, all of a sudden, we start noticing that we start domesticating a certain piece of fruit. It comes from this tree, and we grow it quite readily today, especially a lot along our Great Lake areas. What, up in the Niagara area, they have a bucket load of apples growing there, right?
Yeah, especially up near Wasega Beach.
How the heck did apples get here, Lynn?
Like, this is easy. I know this.
Oh, this is the story of the caribou.
This is Carol.
Connie. Yeah. Oh, the apples are originally from the Tian Shan Mountains in China. And they're about, 4,000 years old?
4,000 to 10,000, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess they would have gotten here just with, now that takes away the ice bridge because the ice bridge was gone before that. But anyhow, it was a story of the caribou eating the apple and walking and gradually walking across the ice bridge. It wouldn't have been the one caribou. It would have been a bunch. And it wouldn't have been one generation.
Hold up a second.
Generations later.
Hold on a minute here. Okay. I just need to establish this. Okay. So what's the story? What's the caribou's name?
Carrie. We'll call her Carrie.
Carrie the caribou. All right. So Carrie the caribou ingests the apple in China.
Yeah.
And then walks to where?
Well, yeah, if the timing's right, I don't think it is, but walks across Beringia. So walks from Siberia
into
Alaska.
Okay. Apple is ingested in China.
Mm-hmm.
Deposited.
Poops it out, yep.
In Alaska.
Got it.
Where is the apple native to?
It's native to China.
So, but the tree, I'm saying on the tree's birth certificate.
China. I guess.
But it was grown in Alaska.
Yeah, that's true, too.
But the original apples that we were talking about,
American
were
citizenship.
Wild crab apples.
No, we're not getting onto that yet. We're talking about border guard situations here. Mom, you're in charge of establishing the apple. What are we doing here? Where is its birthplace?
Well, the apple would be an immigrant then. Well, originally. But remember, Carrie is not... It's generations and generations and generations after her. They just kept wandering northeast, crossed the ice bridge in Beringia.
Because I'm calling
Alaska.
I'm calling Alaska.
Oh, you're calling Alaska.
And I'll tell you why I'm calling Alaska. Let's say, again, you know, you're on a vacation with your spouse and intimate interactions happening and a child is created in Bermuda, but it's born in Canada. Where's the... What's the birth?
Well, yeah,
right?
That's a good way to put it. The child is a Canadian citizen.
Dual citizenship.
Yeah.
All right. So most of the original apples were basically from
Alaska,
Siberia, and they were wild crab apples.
Shen Mountains.
So Matt,
Mountains.
If you wanted to take and we're talking apples or any of your Malus varieties, spares your Latin. Nice. I think I've said one numerous times.
That's okay, no problem.
How would you go about pruning this apple tree in order to make it produce additional yield?
Okay, so here we go. When it comes to anything pruning, but most importantly, organisms that grow fruit for consumption, not just by humans, but we've learned that by caribous as mm-hmm. well. Okay, crossers, debtors. Let's try that again. Crossers, rubbers, dead, broken, form, disease. Right? Crossers, rubbers, dead, broken, form, disease. Dad, Sam.
Yeah, crossered rubbers form something disease. I don't know.
Well, you weren't even listening. Okay, so the number one thing, and mostly the important thing when it comes to fruiting trees, is you need airflow, sunlight, and water getting to the interior of the tree.
Why?
Well, because the interior of the tree, well, if it's accepting water, air, and sunlight, that means that it's open enough to resist disease and to increase the vitality of the tree. The healthier the tree is,
so
more fruit.
60% of the root system of a tree is directly, take the trunk itself and come out approximately 2, 3, 4 meters. And that's where most of your roots are. So you're trying to get the water into the roots, which in this case, you want hydration.
Okay, so on apples, one of the things that you're going to notice is the presence of something called water sprouts. Water sprouts are the bigger brother or bigger sister to suckers. Right? Suckers occur at the base of the tree or very, very close to the bottom of the tree, whereas water sprouts occur on the branches. And all these are is rapid growth from latent buds, basically underneath the surface of the bark.
What did you say?
Rapid growth from latent buds.
Wrong.
What?
Whorls are latent buds. The others are not. They're just junk.
Water sprouts
are strictly... They can be either at the lower portion of the tree or along the branches.
That's what I said.
But they're not whorls. Okay,
whorls. I didn't say whorls, though.
I didn't know that. But latent buds. You called the whatever. I'm not even listening to you anymore.
That's fine. No problem. Don't. It's fine. You know, you're probably safer to not listen to me. Audience, don't listen to me. But these water sprouts are just branches that generally grow straight up, and they're useless. They never produce fruit. They never do anything like that. And they need to be removed so that the tree can divert energy into...
Perfect, by the way.
Into creating fruit. You'll notice on an apple, many or much of the fruit is basically reserved to being created on the outer edges of the tree. Yes?
Yeah. So when you're there and you're going about and doing your pruning, remember, you do not have to use... tree paste of any kind. Bracco, I think, is the one of the product names.
Okay, stop for a second. Why did we stop using that? For listeners that don't know, and Dad, I'll let you talk, but we stopped years ago when I started to get into this, when I was a wee young lad, little Matthew, out with his tree paste. He was 9. That actually never happened.
Matthew, how you doing?
Matthew. Yeah. But the point is that when we would... create a large wound on a tree, usually it was to do with the removal of a branch that was probably damaged over the winter, or it was ailing or whatever, you would cut this branch off and you would put this either a spray, we used to call it Bracco, Dad called it Bracco, pruning spray, or then they had a paste. But mysteriously, we just stopped using that. In fact, it's become increasingly more difficult to find. Dad, why did we stop using this?
Because what happens is the tree produces a hormone called auxin, which helps with healing, and we call it the Band-Aid. So also, when you go and prune, especially anything, let's say, over 2 inches on the diameter of the branch that you're cutting, sap is released. And once the sap is released, it's bleeding, right, Matt?
Now, a person that helps musicians would also be called a Band-Aid.
Oh, anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Sap will callus off and heal over the wound. So it does it on its own. What do you think in the wild? If you come across a tree, it's healing itself.
Completely.
Not with help.
100%.
Our help.
But the issue is that within the wild... And a year ago, I would have sided with you completely on that, and we would have been off this topic, but things change. in the wild, these trees would not be living under the same amount of stress that they would be, say, in a residential area, only because you have the trifecta, right? Sideway, walkway, street. So if you've got these fruit trees in an area where you are dealing with man-made or human-made surfaces, these trees are already under stress. Therefore, if you were to use some sort of a pruning paste or pruning spray on an open wound, that might help because the tree might not be able to heal itself as fast if it was in a residential situation versus a rural one.
Okay, Mom, this is for our listeners. Make it pure and simple. Let's do rule of thumb. Okay, so if you have this particular fruit tree on your property, you want to increase the yield, what would you do in order to get a much successful use of your time?
Well, first of all, if you're going to be pruning that little apple tree, you prune it when it's young, and you want it kind of like a round shape. Like you want it so that
they weep.
Yeah, you don't want really dense foliage because you want the air and the sun to get to every part of the tree.
Absolutely.
You actually want it so that when you look at it from the air, say you're a bird flying over, it actually looks like spokes on a bicycle wheel.
Good stuff.
So the spaces
Looking from above,
bird's eye view.
You got it. Exactly.
And so because what those spaces are, that's allowing air and sunlight to get in to cause the blossoms to form and produce fruit.
The general rule here, ladies and gentlemen, and man, I cannot tell you how often we say this, but the rule here is if it flowers fruits or berries profusely, it needs minimum 6 hours of sunlight. So what the matriarch here is so succinctly alluding to is that the more sunlight you get onto this tree and into the interior of the tree, the more yield you'll have as far as fruit.
More sunlight and more air also create less disease.
Yeah. You got it.
Yeah. Also, heavy pruning should be done basically on a 3-year cycle. So that way you can increase the freedom. You know, we want to improve the
framework. It's got time to recover, right, Dan?
Sure. Yeah. And it's all about the shape of the tree. You want to get better yield. You want better fruit. You want less disease. It always should be, Mom called it kind of circular, but it's more like a conical, especially at the base. So you have more at the bottom, less at the top. It's all to do with light.
Yeah.
Also, you have these giant branches, which are the framework of the apple tree itself.
They're lateral scaffolds, right?
Scaffolds, yeah. And always do your cuts on a 45-degree angle. Why, Mom?
That's so that the water, when it rains, the water runs off of it. Less disease then. Less chance of it being wet.
So make sure that when you do these cuts on the angle, always look for an outward-facing bud. And everything on this tree, Matt, is about increasing your yield, the weight of that fruit when it's all on the tree. So you got to make sure that the branches are strong enough so that they will not break. And wait a minute. So in the end, what you want to have, Matt, is you always want to make sure that any branches that are facing downward towards the ground should go. Why, Mom?
Well, they're taking away energy from the tree and they're not going to produce fruit.
Yeah.
So they're just a waste
again,
of time.
So here's like, you guys have a lavender twist red bud out front of your place, right?
Yeah.
And it's a weeper. It's got branches facing towards the ground.
It's a cauliflower.
So that's science talk. That's horticultural parlance for, ladies and gentlemen, that where the tree flowers out before it leaves. Actually, cauliflowers is where the tree flowers all along the branch.
Yeah.
Okay. Not on the tips of it, not on the laterals or the adjacent branches. All along the branch. And actually, the red bud is Cauliflorus hysteranthus in that it flowers before it leaves.
Whoa.
And it also leaves or flowers all along the branch. But the point is that there is only one purpose for this lavender twist. Mom, what is the purpose of adding a lavender twist to your landscape?
Oh, it makes your garden look absolutely gorgeous. It's
simply
beautiful.
For aesthetics, right?
Yeah.
It is so bizarre looking.
It's weird.
Yeah.
And it is so amazing, Matthew, that when the bloom comes on, we have it a bit down the trunk as well. That tree basically sits with these adornment of beauty. These flowers are so pretty.
Yeah. And the only reason why I'm bringing this up is apple trees or trees that are grown for fruit consumption we're not treating those trees the same way that we would be treating mom and dad's lavender twist. The pruning on this is going to making sure that the tree is strong, making sure that it's not having anything, it's not trying to support any growth that is not producing fruit. Yes?
Yeah.
Whereas on
yeah.
the lavender twist, we would be pruning for shape and aesthetics, not on yeah. an apple tree.
No.
Yeah.
And so anyways, Matt, making it simple, any branches that are facing downward receive less sunlight, therefore you get smaller fruit and less yield. Okay, Matt, wait a minute. This is going, I want you to hit this one. I have on my fence line, I'm hitting the verticals. I am using something on my fence line to produce additional fruit. What am I talking about?
Alaskan apples.
Yes. Brought to you by the caribou. No.
Brought to you by the caribou. Okay. So, Mom, help me with the history on this. If you don't have it, that's okay, but I'm sure that you probably have parts of this memorized. The espaliers were used predominantly in when you had castles and such,
yeah.
or forts,
Europe.
Where they didn't have necessarily a whole lot of land, or they were scared about
sieges
yeah. and insurgents, so they would grow apples on the interior of these castle yeah. courtyards. And it would allow them to have fruit and such when they're, and also yeah. be safe. Yes?
Yeah, especially apples and pears, and okay. especially in Europe. And what some of the castles did was they actually created stone chimneys and lit fires inside these chimneys. And they would have the espaliers growing on the outside of the chimneys. And the heat from the fires would even create fruit in the winter.
Man, so if you were an English lord at the time and you were, let's say you were in charge of multiples of castles, okay, full of tenants, right? People mm-hmm. that were living there?
Yeah.
Man.
You'd be very busy.
You would walk around and say, all these castles are hassles.
Yes, they yes. are.
Okay, so
yes.
So wait a minute.
Espaliers.
Finally, we find out what he's talking about here, listeners. He's talking about espaliers, okay? So you can
choose. I can do it.
We can do it. All I'm asking you is that there's all sorts of things right now. You could use a cordon or you could use a...
But you haven't said what it is. Okay, stop.
Espalier, you just said.
It's no, shapes.
No, shapes. This is an apple tree that grows against a vertical surface.
Can be a pear, too.
Sorry, it's a fruit tree that grows yeah. against
a... Could be cherry, too.
Okay.
Now who's interrupting? This is a fruit tree that is grown on an interior surface and... vertical surface. But they did this years ago so that you could grow fruits in an area that was still safe. So on the interior of a castle. So my parents have got... You guys got Honeycrisp, yeah?
Honeycrisp and Gala.
Okay. Yeah. So they have these espaliers, which are being grown on a custom tartan fence that I designed and built for my parents, okay? And the idea being here is this is very similar to having a clematis in that it climbs the yep. surface. Mm-hmm. Actually, with the espalier, you have to train it. So you basically were literally wiring these branches to the tartan fence. But it functions in a very similar fashion to your apple tree. One of the things that you have to make sure is the instant you see a growth coming off of the espalier that's growing out.
Yes, yeah, sticking out.
East-west. That growth has to come off because you only want to allow this thing to grow north-south. Well, basically north. Yes?
Yeah. So what you must do, listeners, is you must decide on what kind of shape you want. I'm going to go with something fairly natural, or maybe I might even go with a candelabra, but I want something that is quite unique. And when it's, by the way, on this vertical surface, when all the fruit is on them, if I can beat the squirrels,
yeah.
I will have a sizable amount of fruit.
Okay,
you could have hundreds
on.
Of apples.
How many years have you had the espaliers in?
This is going into the third season.
How much fruit production?
Absolutely none.
The squirrels get them.
No, but okay.
Okay, so normally, Matt.
No. What I'm saying is that how much fruit production have you had before the squirrels? I get it.
50 apples, but you could have 400 or 500 apples.
Completely. So generally, ladies and gentlemen, especially for horticultural organisms for fruit production, sometimes it might be 4 to 7 years before they start to produce fruit because they have to reach sexual maturity. For some reason, my parents' espaliers, Mom, didn't they produce fruit in year one?
Yeah,
yeah, they're not supposed
apples.
To. You should really pick them off. I know a lot of people say,
produced
apples, but you don't want to stress out the little tree.
Yeah,
but again,
babies.
Very, very similar to all of their in-ground cousins, not their against-the-fence cousins. Minimum 6 hours of sunlight for something that fruits, flowers, or berries with proficiency, yeah?
Yeah, and everything as far as fruit trees, even your espaliers in the apples, the fruit forms on the spurs. Explain, Maddie.
Oh, so the spur, you know, the Mandalorian, no, Boba Fett has it on the back of the boots.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So the spurs are these little, Dad, why do they call them spurs? Like, it doesn't look anything like the cowboy spur.
You know what, Matthew? They're just layered cells that form, and that's where the fruit, they're stacked, okay?
Okay.
So the different layers are stacked, and at the very end of that, that's where the fruit will
so
form.
So what do they look like, Dad? If a listener was to go and look at a spur on an apple tree, what am I looking for?
Mom?
Because again, it doesn't look like the Boba Fett's cowboy spurs.
It looks like a tiny little branch, but it's maybe at the most an inch long.
Okay,
am
exactly.
Am I right, Jack?
Yeah.
And the problem is, okay, so this time of the year, we just came out of winter. You should have pruned roughly a third of the long shoots back to about 3 to 5 centimeters, 1 to 2 inches long.
And Dad, these orchard people are pruning in January, and part of the reason is because they can see.
Yeah.
It's much easier to prune your fruit tree when it's not in full leaf.
Yeah, I agree. And make sure that you, well, when you do your pruning, make it sure that your cuts are just above a well-placed dormant bud. So you got to make sure that you're not cutting all the buds off, otherwise you're not going to get any fruit. Also, when you're doing your espaliers, everything is about keeping it neat, certain shape, all that kind of thing. So they need pruning back quite regularly, maybe once a month, Matthew, or if they're really in good shape, maybe every 6 weeks. But yes, Lynn?
And generally, don't espaliers produce more fruit than their regular cousins?
In what way?
Like, something to do with the shape of the tree or the way the sunlight hits. They produce quite a bit of fruit.
Well, okay, if you're correlating sunlight to increased fruit production, of course the espalier would be getting more sunlight because, A, it's on a vertical surface.
Yeah.
There's less branches, right, Mom?
Yep.
And you're also training the branches to grow in a certain fashion. My dad made allusions to shape. You can actually wire these things and effectively bonsai them into certain shapes. He mentioned candelabra. He mentioned fan, this whole thing.
We should
right?
do a video on that, Manny.
We should do a video of that. Okay, all that and more on the other side. This is Growing Season brought to you by growingseasoncanada.com. Candle trees coming up.
Hi, this is Lynn McFarland from The Growing Season, brought to you by GrowingSeasonCanada.com. Remember, prune your apple trees.
Yeah, that's
want
it?
More apples.
That's all you got? You can't, something better than that? No apple joke? No something?
I don't know.
Prune your hubby.
What, sorry?
Prune your hubby.
No.
Prune your hubby.
No.
This is why Dad doesn't do the intro to the second half of the segment.
Trying to carry the caribou. She brought the apples over.
So, there you go. That's a better one.
Daddy, each summer, make sure that you trim back any of the side shoots that will grow from the main stem.
Yeah.
You to got approximately 3 leaves. Otherwise, you're going to have the branches going everywhere.
Yeah. So my dad was a bit premature there. Yes. Because he didn't let me get into the housekeeping. So we'll have to get into the housekeeping now. And man, it sounds unprofessional to do this, but whatever. Directly after this show airs, Smarty Pants Can't Wait, Mr. Triggerman. Click on listen and watch. You can hear this show in its entirety, as well as much of our back catalog. As well if you scroll down and click on watch, guess what you can do there, Mom? What?
You can watch.
You can watch stuff. It's amazing.
Yeah.
All of our adventures with the Weather Network. Okay, Dad, you were talking about something about Alaska. I wasn't even listening. Whatever.
I am not repeating. Each summer, you must trim back any of the side shoots because they're going to, what will happen, Matt, is they'll have a tendency to grow everywhere.
Okay.
So you want to trim back to roughly 3 leaves.
So, Dad, something that you made mention of, something that I really want to make sure because I think it's a valuable piece of information, is you said you don't do a hard prune unless it's about every 3 years, yes?
Yeah.
And that, again, is it
but
just...
that's not necessarily on an espalier. That's on a normal fruit tree.
What would you... Do you do a hard prune every year on the espalier? I guess there's less of it.
I would do increments.
Yeah.
Because remember, you're always trying to maintain a certain shape. I would never go with the Belgian fence, for instance, because that's it's just too much work. It's literally, think of a chain link fence that goes in two different directions. Well,
it's lattice, isn't it? Lattice work looking almost like.
Yeah, I would never do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, like, again, you're forming the branches of a tree here into a crisscross shape. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dad, spell espalier for me.
I'm trying to think.
Is it
E-S-P-A-L-I-E-R?
Yes. I-E-R-S.
Okay,
S,
spell it for me one more time. Mom?
E-S-P-A-L-I-E-R-S, if it's a bunch of them.
And the reason why I'm asking this is, as I know that many of our listeners are going to want to scramble right over to Google and Google this, because this is not something that is widely known. And how I know that is, whenever I bring this up to my clients, my design consult install clients, growingseason.canada.com, click on design and build, you can see exactly what we're up to throughout the construction season. Every time I bring this up, the clients are like, I'm sorry, what? You can grow an apple tree on a wall? Yeah, and you can also grow a pear tree. You can also grow a cherry tree.
From time to time, you have to pick the varieties accordingly.
Mom, fingers up.
In my research, it was even mentioned, now this would be in the Middle East, that they espaliered fig trees.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
They do figs.
I know. Hold on, Dad. You have a big, deep breath because you want to go. But we mentioned the word, and some of our listeners have not heard the show previous to this. Mom, what is the big, crazy scientific distinction when it comes to the fig? Go.
Well, the actual fig that you're eating is an inverted flower, and it's been pollinated by a wasp.
Yeah.
The fig wasp. The wasp flies into the flower and then does its thing, and then it's actually in the fig. No, I think the wasp body is long gone by the time you get to eat the fig.
But it has been around for 11,000 years.
Oh, yeah. The fig has.
Oh, yeah.
It was the first cultivated fruit, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, Matt, one of the biggest problems is when you're having any sort of fruiting stuff, especially your plums or your cherries and even your apples, you'll start having an issue with canker. It could be black knot canker and so forth. But remember, anything that you have in your prunus or your malice or even your rosaceae family, you're going to start running into problems with this black knot canker. And wow, does it ever show up on your edible berries like your currants and your gooseberries, ribes?
Why? Why, Dad? Why? I mean, botanically, I think I know why, but I would love to hear,
son, this is why they're getting canker and black knot. Why?
I think the biggest problem, Matt, is the thickness of the bark. It's very easy for disease and so forth to get in there. I think that's probably one of the problems. But, Matt, here's a giant one. If you have, let's say, a white pine tree growing conifer, growing on your property, you must remember, if you have anything fruiting, even 300 meters away, you are going to start getting probably black knot canker. Remember, I had a friend. We have a tree farm, and we planted white pine out in the field.
Yeah.
And his currant bush and his gooseberries, and by the way, don't pair those together because you're going to have the same problem with these spores, which are formed in the late summer. But anyways, he said, what is going on with my currants? And the fact of the matter is we had planted a bunch of white pines, which they get white pine blister mite. No, not mites.
Canker.
Canker.
Sorry. Yeah.
Canker.
So there's some sort of an interaction between the currants and the white pine, right?
Yeah. And, you know, air circulation, all that kind of thing matters. But remember, for some reason, these spores love to come along and they enter the cambium or the stem, eh? But, it was so funny to watch.
Mom, your finger was up.
Well, he mentioned what I was going to mention.
Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned currants, and this heads me down the road here. We've talked about apples. We've now talked about how you don't want to put white pine anywhere near currants. But many of my clients have some manner of fruiting bush. Currant, not so much. But again, we get into...
If you hate currants.
Yeah, you know, thank you for that, Dad. But... You know what? I think currants were used more years ago. I don't think making jam is nearly as big as it once was.
They are actually a member of the grape family.
Okay.
And I think originally they came from Greece.
Currants.
Yeah. But they are very small. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got the reds and the black currants. A lot of people like them. The yellow, white ones I've seen as well. But it's all about keeping that bush healthy, Matthew. 3 to 4 shoots of on either side, you want to get rid of the old shoots. Yeah. You should always end up with a total of 9 to 12 shoots. But, Maddie, here's a big one. This is for your ma. You're coming along and you're putting in the garden. I wanted you to actually plant some of these in our knot garden. And they were the vaccinium family. And I was thinking either Blue Crop or Blue Jay or Legacy. Even the pink varieties, Matt, never can find them, like the pink icing or pink popcorn.
Pink champagne as well.
Pink champagne. Mm-hmm. But, Mom, can you please tell our listeners, how the heck could they improve the yield on their blueberries?
By the way, hold on. Before you do that, vaccinium is Latin for blueberry. He didn't say blueberry until a little bit later.
Yeah.
Go on, Mom. Blueberry.
Okay, first of all, you look at the bush. You look at the shape of it. Now, I'm picturing a high bush croonberry. Blueberry.
I'm also picturing a high bush. Oh, my God. A high bush croonberry.
Blueberry. So you wanna prune it to keep its shape. You also want to prune it that, again, it's a berry, so it blossoms and it berries. You want to prune it so that it's getting as much sun and as much air as you can.
Where?
On the blossoms and on the berries.
And throughout the center as well.
Yeah, what? Yeah.
You want berries everywhere, right?
Yeah. Right? Yeah, you prune away any branches that are damaged or dead because they're not going to do anything for the plant but suck away the energy.
Remember
the
that
food.
Save the strongest canes that are on the plant because that's where you're going to get your best flower buds. You want to save those.
As well as, too, the strongest canes. So what my dad's talking about is the canes are the north-south branches.
The
right?
up and down
so
guys.
Okay, so it's the same as your roses. Your roses got canes as well. And if you save the strongest ones back, then they will grow lateral branches, and then those lateral branches will then begin to produce fruit.
And also, anytime you are pruning and that, and the diseased stuff falls to the ground, get rid of it. Don't leave it lying around.
Also, you're going to hear us say this numerous times, outward-facing bud. Why is that so important, Matt?
What do you mean?
We say, okay, always save two of the shoots or outward-facing buds, because why are we talking about outward-facing buds?
Because if you save inward-facing buds, then this thing begins to grow branches facing inward. You don't want any of that.
Air circulation,
you
left
got
right. That's important.
You want, you're maximizing your fruit production.
So, yes. Matt, this is for you, man. I'm not a big wine drinker, per se, like any of the vitis, okay, the grapes. And they've been on Earth roughly, we've been cultivating them
4,000 years. Yeah.
So, Matt, quickly, how would you tell our listeners, what can they do to increase their yield on their grapes?
Okay, so the first thing is, when you go to plant a grape, the number one thing is, in year one, I wouldn't recommend pruning anything, right? You sort of let them just do their thing. That's what we tell clients, too. Even if you get away from the edible stuff, if you've just put in a brand new flower bed with brand new perennials, flowering shrubs, and evergreens, keep the pruning light on the first year because these things are just trying to get themselves established.
Or not at all.
Or not at all.
Yeah.
It's just trying to get themselves established in their new home, right? But what you would want to do is select the most lateral shoot on the plant. Remember that with grapes, what are you looking to have these things do? Grow up.
Yeah.
Right? It's the same. We chatted recently about climbing roses, making sure that you're leaving back the longest and highest shoot because you want this thing to climb.
Also, right? You want to keep it open, therefore more light, because if you look where the fruit forms on your grape plant, you will notice it's down and underneath.
Yep.
So you got to open it up so there's light.
Yep. And if there are shoots that are trying to compete with this lateral shoot, cut those close to the trunk. Again, what you're doing here is you're not pruning for aesthetics, you're pruning for yield. All right? So you want to make sure that you're picking a nice, strong, lateral shoot. Prune any competing shoots. It's hard. Shoots back towards the trunk. In the second year, cut the main shoot back a few inches below the first to support, let's try that again. Cut the main shoot back a few inches below the first horizontal support of a trellis. The idea being is that if you would like to prune this thing down a little bit, Dad, what's going to happen? If I prune that lateral shoot, it's going to want to thicken out on each side, yes?
Yeah, and then you get too much growth, therefore it's not getting enough light to ripen your fruit.
Right. So you want to, if you are going to prune back for height, you want to make sure that it's just below the closest support on the trellis, because what's going to happen is that fruits or that shoot's going to then grow up to it. Right?
So year two, Matt, what would you do?
That's what I just said.
Yeah.
Cut the main shoot back a few inches below the first horizontal support of a trellis, right? Year three, you want to thin out shoots on your lateral branches, basically one shoot every 6 to 8 inches, and then cut the remaining shoots off. Okay, these are going to leave stubs on your grape. long story completely short, because we can get into a whole
show on this.
A whole show on this. The point is that, as with any of your other fruiting organisms or vegging or organisms, you want to make sure that you are pruning away any of the insignificant, broken, small, underdeveloped branches and keeping the ones that are strong to support fruit growth.
Also, remember, anytime you see something just growing, just sitting there and growing off the trunk or from up from the roots, that is useless growth and that should go away. And most of the varieties, Matt, I think I've got Concord here, and I know there's a lot of European grape varieties out there. But I think I got two or three. I can't remember the other one. We had a Niagara. I think we have a Niagara grape.
I ate some of the little purple ones.
So, Maddie, I don't have this in my garden anymore. What I used to have back maybe in the late 80s, 90s, I used to have Corylus calerna or purpurea, which is your nutting varieties for what?
Hazelnut.
Hazelnut, or what's the other name then for them? There's another
Filbert.
One. Filbert.
Oh,
thank
okay.
you.
They're one in the same,
so
right?
On Earth, then, Matt, for about 390 million years, and they've been around for a very long time. So let's say that you want to get fruit on your nutting bush in a very short period of time. What would you do, Lynn?
Well, first of all, with the hazelnuts, especially because we had two hazelnuts, you have to plant them at the most. You can't have them more than 8 to 10 feet apart.
Why?
They need that
for
pollination.
Wait. So why? Why? What kind of pollination?
I'm thinking it's wind.
Mostly wind.
Because they produce
with
catkins.
If the odd bee comes along, it probably doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
Now, while we're on the topic here, if you're a fan of Tim Burton, the director.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he of Beetlejuice, Batman, the 1989 version, Nightmare Before Christmas. Didn't he do Charlie and the Chocolate Factory or Willy Wonka, Alice in Wonderland? It's just, again, Edward Scissorhands. You know this guy's aesthetic. It's always gothic. It's weird. It's twisted. It's all kinds of, it's this mishmash of like horror and sweetness, right?
Yeah.
Corylus avellana contorta, contorted corkscrew witch hazel. Google that. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll say it again slower. Corylus avellana contorta, that's the Latin, or contorted corkscrew witch hazel. This thing looks like something out of a Tim Burton film.
It's really
cool. It is bonkers looking. You guys had two of these things. The only problem is they never nutted out because there was a set
of steps in the middle which blocked the wind pollination that was necessary.
Yeah.
So, Matt, again, you would you would prune it probably early spring, just before the growth gets going big time, and then the new growth would kind of hide any wounds and so forth. But you can periodically through the summer, Matt, you can do a light pruning here and there, but be careful. You don't want to prune off the fruiting portions of the tree, in this case, the nutting portions of the tree. Again, low-hanging branches, get rid of them because there's not going to get enough light. So everything is about getting enough light, keeping enough energy so that particularly in this case, it's a nut or an apple will get as much yield possible. And in this day and age, Matt, you know how expensive fruit and nuts can be.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. I mean, there's like mangoes at our local grocery store are like $5 a pop.
Oh, wow.
For like, for a mango.
Yeah.
So you better be into that mango.
Yeah, you better really enjoy it.
All right, so then I would say on a customer site, the fruiting organism that I see the most, more than any other one, has to be raspberry. Now, for me...
I don't like the seeds.
For me, listen, I don't like raspberry.
Nope.
I don't like the taste of raspberries. I'm not a big fan. I mean, if someone put a raspberry something in front of me, I wouldn't say no to it. And in fact, I'm a liar. My mother-in-law makes these raspberry squares that are just about the most beautiful thing ever.
Yeah.
But the reason why the customers use raspberries a lot is strawberries are wonderful, and I much prefer the taste of the strawberry, but they can be very, very invasive.
Yes.
And
they have prickles all over them.
Who does?
Not strawberries.
Oh, you're talking strawberries.
Well, strawberries, but I'll go back to raspberry. I would say customers want to use strawberries more because it's easier to do, but they're super invasive. Customers also love blueberries. The only problem with the blueberry or the vaccinium is that they require an acidic soil to thrive.
Yeah.
And in some cases, you don't have that. So raspberries seem to be the one. I relocate more raspberries on client sites than I would say any other berry. Here is the issue with raspberry. You sort of get into the exact same type of scenario as you do with hydrangeas. For those that don't know, hydrangeas bloom on either old wood or they bloom on new wood. What that means is, let's say the old wood varieties, they would bloom on structures, on branches set or grown last season, and you would wait to prune these until after they've bloomed. Other types of hydrangeas bloom on wood created this year, so you can prune them before they bloom. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Raspberries are very similar. There are two different types of raspberries, okay? There's something called summer bearing or summer fruiting. It just bears fruit in the summer. There's also something called everbearing, which is autumn fruiting. Okay, so basically the type of raspberries that you have will determine how you prune them. It's helpful to be able to tell the difference between the two types.
And remember, most canes on that raspberry bush only live 2 years and then they die. So the first year, Matt, they're vegetative. There's no fruit whatsoever. But the second year, those canes will produce fruit and they will produce a fair bit of fruit. Sometimes, Matt, you will end up, if you're not keeping the really thick, healthy-looking canes, leaving some of the small, they will have a tendency to fall over and they might need staking. But Matt, here's a big one. They love nitrogen, especially in the spring. And watch this, listeners, those coffee ground people. Using coffee grounds can at times be acidic, and you should never, under any circumstance, use any coffee grounds around your raspberries after September.
And I have clients that say, you know, we've moved into the house. This is our first full year in the house, and there's raspberries in the yard. And I don't know what type of raspberries I got because I haven't planted them. How do I know? Well, it's a very, very simple thing. Mom, if your raspberry is creating fruit in the summer, you have a summer fruiting raspberry.
Yep. Yeah.
Consequently, if your raspberry is producing fruit in the fall, you have a fall bearing raspberry. So oftentimes what ends up happening is you need to wait. If you're new to this house and there's raspberries on the site, you need to wait for that first year to see exactly what the heck it is going on. If it's fruiting in the summertime, then you know that you have to prune it a certain way. If it's fruiting in the fall, it's the other way. We have about 5 minutes, Dad.
Okay, so no matter what you're growing in your yard, grow something that your family likes. Don't go and start growing really weird things, especially if they don't like. So if they don't like blueberries, don't go about growing blueberries, okay? But Matt,
now stop for a second. Hold on with that. Blueberries is the oddball one because, like, Mom, what color do strawberry leaves go in the fall? I don't know.
Oh, kind of a reddish orange. Yeah,
a little bit.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. What about raspberries? Who cares?
No, they just kind of go yellow, brown, fall off. Yeah.
Blueberries, though.
They have a nice fall color.
It is bonkers.
Yeah.
So outside of the fact that this thing would be growing fruit that is very edible, that you probably won't ever get to because the birds just adore them.
Yeah, they love them.
But these things produce a fall color that is second to none. Okay. So again, sort of in the same idea in that, you know, grow the bush if your family likes blueberries, or whatever they like, grow that. But there is a bit more of an incentive when it comes to blueberries only because there is that outstanding fall color.
Yes, and the blue of the berries, if you're lucky enough to have them into the fall, if the birds haven't got them, looks so nice against the reddish orange.
They do.
Color.
Oh, it's just
beautiful.
Pops. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So Matt, you know that the plant that we use for everything. We use it for fall color. We use it for trunk color. We use it for even the
love,
shape.
Love.
Yeah. Amelanchier canadensis or Saskatoon serviceberry. Fantastic, especially for its berries. But the problem is, Matt, as of yet, I cannot beat the birds.
No.
And I know that they have all these methods of covering them with nets.
They absolutely do. Look, here. Okay. So when I get this question, and listeners, and for those that don't know, we've expanded as far as the breadth and scope of our radio dispersion. So we have a lot more of an audience now, and many have not heard me rave and rant about this, and it behooves me to do so. I get the same question from clients every single time I go up to a client site on a consult. What's the shrub? What's the one? And what's the one that you recommend above everything else? Now, 9 times out of 10, before I even answer, they're like, Japanese maple? And I'm like, nope. And they're like, what do you mean by nope? I'm like, well, you know, if you like spending $700 on planting an absolute diva, finicky thing in your flower bed that may or may not live because our climate is so erratic, then yeah, go for the Japanese maple. Or you can go for any number of the amelanchiers, the service berries. Whether that, my dad so astutely mentioned Saskatoon service berry. Gorgeous. Okay, the Amelanchier canadensis, which is just a downy service berry. They come in clump form, which is a shrubby thing that comes up from the ground. They come in a standard form, which is a tree version. Ladies and gentlemen, this is where to spend your money.
No vertical form as of yet, but it's coming, I understand.
What, like you talk about like a pyramidal
that
form?
Can, columnar, you know, that can grow in these,
oh my God, count. Yeah. No!
I'm talking
about. No, there
about,
is.
What is it?
Oh, okay. Don't worry about it. I will on the outro. I will find that for you. The point is this: we always make a mention of we want something to do more than one thing. For instance, we don't use forsythia because forsythia just has that yellow flower in early spring and then it is a green zitty blob
and
the rest of the season.
With the cold weather a few weeks back, a lot of your
forsythia blooms got blown off
and
anyway.
Be killed off.
Okay, but the downy service berry does four. Count them four. Four things for your money. Check this out. It flowers white in early spring. Beautiful. Sign of spring. Number two, it has blackberries that my dad made mention. You're not going to get to them because the birds adore them. If you can, this is used for Saskatoon berry jam or service berry jam. It's absolutely
high Hystranthus,
Maddie. It's also Hystranthus, which means it flowers before it leaves. Third thing that it does, fire engine red fall color. Fire engine
yeah,
red.
Really gorgeous.
Okay, and then the last thing that it does is it has this really weird, unique steel gray bark that looks absolutely gorgeous in your landscape throughout the winter months. If you've got $500, spend that on a downy service berry.
Very few disease issues. And this is for
Hardy to Zone
Sharona, 2 out of the Niagara area. She does food for us. She swears by Hippophyra rhamnoides. What is that, Matty?
That would be sea buckthorn.
And a lot of thorny things happening there. But she sent me pictures, and she produces something, I think it's called sea foam or something, and she makes a juice from the berries.
Very healthy for you.
Yeah. And they're orange berries, very similar looking to, I think, a raspberry.
That's a wild looking organism.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But it all comes down to this, listeners. If you decide you want to use a certain plant in your garden for fruit, again, I would like to choose something that my family likes. So we have apples. We're going to have ground cover. We have ground covers in strawberries as
yes,
using for a strawberry form.
Hold up. And that is a great place to press pause. I'm calling an audible at the line here because it's partly my show, Forget Strawberries. I made mention of an upright service berry. Ladies and gentlemen, look, like years ago, if you were to do an upright, it had to be an evergreen. And when I say upright, what I'm talking about is it's a pencil.
Yeah.
Right? The horticultural organism grows up and down. It's not a wide growing organism. It's a north-south. Years ago, you'd have to use some manner of juniper or whatever. Or my dad would use a juniper because that's all he ever did. Junipers and stinking
skyrockets.
Or what's it? The Austrian pines, right? Yeah. But, ladies and gentlemen, you heard me profusely gush about the wondrousness that is a service berry. Standing ovation service berry gets roughly 12 to 15 feet tall and 4 to 6 feet wide, giving you all of the wondrousness of the service berry in a columnar, which is just landscape parlance for upright, in a columnar form. Ladies and gentlemen, we don't have one of these things yet. I want one.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
Yes.
The only issue with this is the popularity of these things as a result of shows like The Growing Season makes it quite difficult to get these things during the season. I tried to specify some of them last year and the customer was jumping up and down excited and I just cannot get my hands on them because once one person finds out, it begins to sort of spread its way through the industry. But if you can get it, standing ovation service berry is the most wonderful thing. All the benefits of a service berry, all the wondrousness of a service berry in an upright form. GrowingSeasonCanada.com is the website. You can go there. You can click on contact. It allows you to send an email directly off to me. Design and build, listen and watch. Anything to do with the growing season can be found there, guys. We always end the show in a very similar fashion. This week will be no exception. Short one, but fantastic. What is Darth Vader's favorite fruit?
No idea, Maddie.
No.
Empire apples.
Yeah.
Mom.
Till next time, have a good one, and please be safe.
Jack out. Oh.